This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
If you don't tell your story, at the end of the day, somebody else is going to try and tell it. Do you want to tell your story or do you want somebody else to tell it for you?
What do memories and education have in common? Deborah LaFrank believes that inside every person is a collection of stories and memories. Her job is to draw them out of her clients, creating a visually engaging visual life story that is deeply meaningful and creates legacy and connection between generations. With the recent popularity of sketchnoting in schools, I wanted to have her on the show to talk about the different ways that we can use visuals to tell a compelling story about ourselves and our students. We learned the three life lessons that can help us live a fuller life and to help our students do the same for themselves. Deborah LaFrank, thank you so much for joining me on Kindsight 101 today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I was thrilled when you asked me to come on.
Well, I really enjoyed watching your presentation. I think it was about a month or so ago, and you talked a lot about your work telling people's stories through these visual stories that you do. And I was really inspired by that. And before we sort of dive into that element, what I'd love to do is I'd love to just back up and have you talk about maybe a significant moment in your life that really made you change the way that you look at the way that we create and hang on to our memories.
Okay. So I think for me, that really is the story that's a big story in my life, which started when I was 14. When I was in a significant car crash, and I told that story at the presentation, this is new for me telling this story publicly, but that experience of coming so close to my own personal death and having my best friend die in that car crash, two other people also die. And the enormous amount of responsibility that I felt for Brenda and I being there, because it was my idea for us to hitchhike that day, and that survivor guilt initially was a fairly rough couple of years for me. But it eventually became something that really motivated me to live a very, very full life, a life for two people in some ways. But it clearly made me realize how precious life was. And so I'm not 14 anymore. I really feel like I have lived my entire life now with this awareness of how precious life is. And people talk about that, right? Like, that's like, oh yes, I had this life-changing amount of experience. And then I had this big awareness. And there's truth to that. There's a reason why people say that, because that is in fact what happens. People have these moments where, something big has happened and it's a big shift. So that was one piece. And then, I think the other one was that my mom passed away about 20 years ago. And my dad has always been this great storyteller. And I realized that his stories and my stories were wrapped up together. And that if I didn't collect his memories, that I would lose another part of my own personal story. And so his was the first life story project where I really interviewed someone and collected their memories and then turned it into this visual story. So I think those two things kind of combined together were really pivotal for me.
Sure. Can you take us back to that morning when you were 14 years old and how that whole story sort of unfolded? Like, you were excited to, you were on a trip. And can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So we were really excited because we had just become, we'd just been picked for the cheerleading team. And we had tried out the summer before, or the year before in grade nine, and we hadn't got picked. And so, you know, through the year and through the summer, we had practiced a lot and everything. And, you know, this, you know, we're 14, right? That was a big deal for us to get chosen. And I come from very humble beginnings. So that was a big deal to get chosen. So we decided, I suggested, you know, let's hitchhike to the nearby town to tell her dad, because her mom and dad didn't live together. And she really wanted to share this news too. So that's what we did. So we walked down to the corner and stuck our thumb out. And pretty quickly, you know, two young girls, right? A car pulls over. It's a little mini convertible. And with a couple of guys, I think they were in their late 20s or something. Off we went down the road, and unfortunately the weight of us being in the back, and we were kind of in this little luggage area. It shakes my head when I think of the choices. But you know, when you're young, you make these choices and you're immortal, right? Mm-hmm. And so you think that nothing will ever bad happen to you. And so anyway, down the road we went, and unfortunately the weight of the car, and this is in Southern Ontario, so cars can get rusty. This car had rust. It also didn't have an internal frame to hold the whole car together. Car ended up, yeah, which is incredible. The car ended up swerving all over the road, and three motorcycles just happened to be traveling one after the other down the road and came around the corner, and they had nowhere to go, and they hit the car one at a time, and the car spun and ripped into two pieces. And when it stopped, everything stopped moving. The front end and the back end of the car were a quarter mile apart, and three people were dead, and six people were injured, some of them really badly, including myself. I really badly injured my left leg. It got ripped on the ragged metal of the car as I flew out of it. And, you know, I ended up having over a dozen surgeries and had gangrene at one point. They really, you know, I was very, very lucky. And I do have my leg, which I'm very, very fortunate. But that, you know, that's a pretty big, compelling story. And, you know, one of the things that I firmly believe is every single person has compelling stories inside them. And maybe, you know, hopefully they don't have people dying in them in such a dramatic way, but everybody has stories and everybody has memories that inform how they live and how they interact with the world. And I think it's really important to honor those, that journey that you've been on. And at times it will be tough. So, but you know, not every story is a terrible story, right?
Right. And I think behind every story is often a lesson, especially if there is, I mean, whether it is a celebration, but I think oftentimes in tragedy, there's a lesson. And so when you think back to that time and the person that you've become now and the way that you look at your life, what are the things that that experience truly taught you about what's important in life?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, definitely that life is very precious and that every moment is a moment. It may not be the most amazing moment, but every moment is a moment worth being fully in. And, you know, and I'm no genius about, you know, complete mindfulness or anything like that. I certainly am very good at being worried about things and wrapping my mind around things that could be happening or, you know, should have happened or whatever. But you know, at the same time, I have a really good reset that, you know, okay, what's important now? What really matters right now? And it also has helped me make, you know, set goals and be able to see that, you know, I came from very humble beginnings and I, you know, I could have had, I mean, after the first couple of years, I could have continued down a very dangerous and very destructive personal path. Yes. And at some point, like very destructive and that's not something I unpacked publicly, but I was really on the edge of going in a very, very, very dangerous area and was in that world and realized, I actually could do something different. Right. I can make a change here. I'm deciding You know, this thing happened to me, but this doesn't define 100% who I am forever.
That's so powerful. And I think that's really what jumped out at me too when I heard your story, is this idea that we do have agency over our life, and these bad things happen, and different kinds of bad things happen to different kinds of people. And the story that we pull from it, that narrative, is really up to us to determine what it means and what we draw from it in terms of lessons. And so I think about this concept of pulling these memories and telling a story. What do you see in terms of the importance of taking time to intentionally tell our own stories or tell the stories of those really important people in our families? Why is that important?
It's interesting, you know, in the media, and you know, when you talked about earlier about, you know, the concept of us using social media to tell our stories and whatnot. Story is everything. I mean, it's story is who we are, and the experiences that we have inform who we are, and the experiences that we've had also inform who we are. So I think it's really critical to tell our stories and to collect our stories. When we collect them, it gives us an opportunity to kind of step back and go, oh, I see the connections now between these things. I mean, it really, for me, you know, getting into doing the memory collecting and the life story work that I do now, it, like I say, this is early days for me telling my own story in the way that I have been. I didn't do that before because I didn't realize how strong those connections were until I started to do this for other people.
Isn't that interesting?
It was fascinating to me.
Yes.
So I just really think that it gives us an opportunity to kind of step back and go, oh yeah, okay, there was that path that there was a left and a right and I went left. Oh, okay, there's that other time where I met someone and it made all the difference about something. Someone said something and it made all the difference. And I just think that when we reflect back, it gives us an opportunity to really honor who we are.
Yes, and the journey that we came on. This makes me think of Steve Jobs. He had this quote that he gave at a commencement speech, and he said, "You can't connect the dots looking forward, you can only connect them looking backward." And I think there's so much to that, is that when we're on the path, we really, it's so hard to see it clearly and to see ourselves within it and the purpose behind it and the lessons and all that. And then when you reflect, there's so much power to that. And so I really appreciate you talking about the dot connecting, because it really resonates.
Well, and you know, I know this podcast is about, you know, kindness, and I think that there's really an element of kindness to yourself. You know, it's so easy to be critical. I mean, I talk, you know, to people about the itty bitty shitty committee that usually sits on your shoulder.
Yes.
They're about an inch and a half tall and they natter at you like, oh, you can't draw. Oh, you can't write. Oh, you can't do this. Oh, you'll never finish that. Oh, blah, 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 whatever. Right. Like they're just annoying.
Sure.
And I like to actually sort of almost physically flick them off my shoulder when I hear that itty bitty shitty committee right there chatting away. And I just think that really it's, you know, it's so easy to be critical. And when you take an opportunity to reflect back, you're being kind to yourself. You're doing it for yourself.
Right.
And if you're doing it for someone else, it's like when I did the life story for my dad, and now when, you know, when I get asked to help people do their life story or do the life story of other people, I mean, the amount of positive energy that comes from having someone fully listen and allow you to unpack your journey, it is a very, very powerful kindness gesture.
I totally agree. I think it's an act of service. I think it must also build a bond. And I just think about even the neurochemicals that are probably released, like the oxytocin and that connection, that sense of connection between you and the storyteller must be pretty amazing. And then to be seen like that really for who they are is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd like to, and I don't know if you, I don't know what your research background is in terms of the sketchnoting and the visual stories, but I would imagine that there's a fair amount of research that contributes to what you do in terms of this is powerful work. It helps people to solidify their memories. It helps them to remember. What's sort of the background in terms of how effective the visual stories are for creating a strong memory base?
Well, I think it's something like 67% of people are visual learners. Mm. You know, so when you use visuals in your, not every student is a visual learner, but a significant majority of students are visual learners. Do I have research that I've done? I'll be honest, I don't actually. I don't have that off the top of my head. I know sure. I've certainly read a lot of different things over the years, but I know for me, again, personally, that talking about the sketch notes, for instance, and I'm not sure if your audience is aware of this type of visual note taking, but it's definitely taken off quite a bit. Mike Rohde is kind of a pioneer and has a couple of great books about it. The Sketch Note Handbook and the Sketch Note Workbook are really worthwhile books to check out. When I take visual notes that I remember what's being said, I am more interested in going back to my notes and reviewing them again. Because I'm not being able to write everything down, I'm filtering all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always getting to that essence of what really resonated for me. What is it that this person is wanting me to get? And it's very, I think it's a very powerful way of note-taking, whether you're a student or, going to presentations or going to conferences, going to meetings. It's just, or listening to podcasts. I take sketch notes from podcasts, and any time that somebody's telling me something that I think, oh, that's really something I want to remember, I write it down and I use some visual elements to help me remember. And it's, sketchnoting is really quite easy to do. I find that the key is to just have two pens always ready, one that's a fine tip, black line or whatever, and then another one that might be a higher contrast, a red or a blue or something, and a little bit of fatter tip, so that you can kind of, and they're both uncapped, and you just can just interchange one, one's in your right hand and the other was in your left hand, and you're just able to sort of grab them and move, and you're putting bullets down and highlighting keywords and things like that. And there's some great resources out there about how to sketch note, I think it's a tool that has a lot of potential, and people remember things. There is a lot of data about that actually. Yes. I can't recite it, but.
No, that's okay. And I just really appreciate that. And I like that you gave a simple sort of entry point too, because I think for me, I still live in this place of frantic trying to write everything down, and I can appreciate the value of the visual note taking. And I think it's something that I'd like to play around with in my own life, because I like to be like, I love to doodle, and I think I'm a little bit creative that in that respect, visually creative. And so what would you say to an educator who may have students, I'm thinking about middle school, high school, where they're going through a fair amount of content. What would you say to a teacher who has students who might be interested in doing this? What would you tell them?
I would definitely check out Mike Rohde. Another fellow that's doing sketch note tutorials is Doug Neal. If you Google sketch notes, there's just a wealth of information out there. But, I would really encourage your students not to use lined paper, to use blank pages, and to put things in containers. If something resonates in terms of, if there's some image or something that's on the projected on a screen or that's being shown, that just do some little doodle of what it looks like. It doesn't matter that it isn't correct in terms of being an illustration, but whatever they take down on that page is going to be more locked into their mind because they have looked at it in a compartmentalized way, in they're classifying things as they group things together, group information together, because you know you present a lot of information and you want the students to make the connections. If they're doing visual note taking, they are starting to make those connections right away because they're starting to cluster information and
right around even that symbolic icon or whatever.
Exactly.
It is. That's
exactly
so interesting. And so just by seeing that in a few keywords, you can kind of cue that whole chunk of the learning or that conversation that they would have had. That really makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So I was really interested by some of the examples that you gave that people can actually invite sketchnoting into their lives. So you gave some really fun examples and some really fun ways to start playing around with this. One of them, for example, was in order to thank your guests for coming to a dinner party that you host, you can send out little thank you cards with a sketch note of who sat where at the table, some of the key notes around or key elements of the discussions that were had, little icons representing the food that was eaten. I just thought that was such a special and unique way to say thank you and then also to create this shared memory. And I think in the classroom, oh my goodness, the amount of applications that could take place is infinite, right? So are there, could you give us a few different examples of lists or sketch note ideas that people could start playing around with in this respect?
Yeah. So let's say you're working in a group on some project. You know, I would, you know, like the dinner table example that I gave before. So I would just, you know, draw the shape of the table, label where everybody's sitting, and identify, okay, so what is it that what's our goal? And start to kind of almost create a little bit of an agenda looking page, but it sets the tone for, okay, here's who's here, here's when we're here, and what's our goal? So, and maybe you draw some, you know, like a bullseye sort of graphic and with a little arrow and identify, okay, we're sitting here and our goal is that we need to figure out what we're going to do for our science project, for a display or something like that. And then, you know, start to kind of, again, put those bullet points of, okay, what are the steps we're going to take? And then so that almost, like I say, that almost becomes a little bit of a, what if I was doing a group facilitation kind of thing, that would be like an agenda we would put up, right?
Sure.
And then you go in and you take, okay, so this first objective, okay, now let's put that as a title on the top of a new page. Now, how are we going to unpack that? Who's going to be responsible? And again, you know, the little icons of, you know, stick people are fantastic and because they have no gender, they have no body weight, you know, maybe they have a color of a shirt or something, and you can just sort of, you know, put little stick. Okay, so Joe is going and Mary are going to be working on this, and here's the things that they're going to work on, and just, you know, I think the idea is really about just visually trying to make the information exciting so that you want to go back to it, and also that it's very clear. It's not. There's very, very few sentences. I think I show at the presentation, I showed an example from travel journaling.
Yes.
where, you know, I'm writing in columns and the columns are only two or three words wide. And you're just kind of capturing kind of the essence of what's happened and what's been experienced. And to a certain extent, it, you know, in that particular case, it kind of almost becomes poetry, right? But just that sense of, you know, you're just kind of getting those, that it's all about the nuggets. It's all about distilling information. And I think that in this day and age, there's so much information out there that's a really critical skill to have, is to distill. And it's a big part. I mean, for us in terms of the work here that what I'm doing with, you know, me and my team, you know, we're always like, we'll get somebody's life story and it's huge. You're unearthing this huge story sometimes. Right. And then it's that distilling phase is absolutely critical to get it down to the real essence of what happened. And so I think in a classroom, if you can help students to distill, and you know, one thing that might be a fun way to kind of help them practice is maybe show them a little video about or introduce sketchnoting to them, and then find a podcast that they a YouTube video or something that they, a podcast is probably better because there wouldn't be visuals necessarily, though, right. Though you could, but play something, right? Do a practice, make it a 15-minute presentation, give everybody two pens and a blank sheet of paper and just go at it. And, you know, and there's, and you have to be really careful about the itty bitty shitty committee, because they're going to tell you, you can't write very well and you can't draw and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And it just doesn't matter. It's about distilling down to the essence of the information. And it would be a fun exercise to do, you know, maybe there's some presentation that the teachers always thought, oh, I'd love to share that with them, but how do I do that in a way that's meaningful?
I think that's great. I love that example. I think that's a wonderful thing to practice with, right? And even front end load it with a few, here are some basic stick people sketches, or here are some basic boxes that you can use, or some of the, just the basic tools that they might need within the presentation that would be accessible to them. And I think that would be really fun to see what everybody came up with. Because I mean, even as an educator, when I do a directed draw, all of the drawings are so different and yet it's all the same instructions. So it's really neat to see, like you said, what are kids able to distill and pull out as important information. And mm-hmm. and you're right. And I think that that distilling process is such an important skill, because we are inundated with information all the time. And so I think for students to come away from school being able to do that, it's a powerful lesson. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to hear a little bit about, I mean, sometimes this stuff can seem overwhelming or daunting when you're thinking of telling your own story. Mm-hmm. I know that you had a few little tips around ways that you can build it into your birthday or build it into the month. How can you do this storytelling in such a way that it's actually doable and that people will keep it up even if it seems bigger than it really is?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's, thanks for that question. I am really passionate about helping people collect their memories, and life is moving so fast, right? So mm-hmm. one of the things that that I do and that I have other people doing now is on their birth date, so mine's the 17th of every month, I sit for 20 minutes with my phone, and I have a app on there, Voice Record Pro, that I use, but there's lots of different ones. And I just tell a story. And I have started chronologically, but I do jump in at different times and tell stories from, you know, when something happens, and I just want to not forget that. Or, you know, a couple months ago, or I guess last month with Family Day, and just, you know, what was going on. And so I just, you know, that happened to be the 17th. And so I just told a story about, you know, family and what the things I like to do around community with the family and experiences that I like to bring to my family. But I just, you know, I think it's just, and it's just 20 minutes every month. And I just tell a story about some stage of my life. And I, as I say, I am working chronologically, and, you know, so I'm collecting all of those recordings, and then at some point I can take them and get them transcribed. I use a transcription service called SpeechPad. And so it turns it into a Word doc that I can then edit.
Oh, so perfect.
That's one. Yeah. So that's one thing. Cause you know, the thing that I have said a number of times to people, you know, if you don't, tell your story, at the end of the day, somebody else is going to try and tell it. Right. And, you know, do you want to tell your story, or do you want somebody else to tell it for you? And I think, you know, the bottom line is we all want to tell our own story. Another idea that I had was that I've been doing is getting people to make a list of all the different places that they've lived.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really fun. And then so you make, you know, you go through and you, you know, you, if you can get the right address perfectly, that's great. You know, that doesn't usually happen with everybody, but some people know them all. But within each of these, with each address, then you do a little, again, the little essence of, okay, so who else was living there? How old were you? Were you going to school? Were you working? You know, what kind of things were you getting up to at that time? And just a little a nugget of, you know, what was going on for you. And that right away, now you've got a list of some story to build on. I was thinking the other day that you could do the same thing with the, with all the places that you've maybe traveled, nationally, internationally, locally, just, mm-hmm. you know, decide, okay, well, these are all the places that I really love and have had great experiences, and they don't become a novel, but they're just, again, you just get to the essence and without being too like, it is this balance of factual and story. Right.
Yes.
And you know, because it's, you know, 1962 or whatever number it is, you know, you just kind of, you don't want to be kind of, I went here and I, you know, stayed there for 3 weeks and that's it. Well, that's, right. that's not really that
story. Yeah.
It has to be more than that. So.
Sure. Yeah. And I just had a thought too for school. You could do for yourself as an educator or even as a principal or a counselor, like you could have one for every year, right? What were some memorable moments, or even have yeah. the students come up with what are some memorable moments and do a class sketch note, or have each student do, you know, the top three things that stood out for them or something, and compile a book or do an online kind of book creator book or something. There's so many neat ways to use these sketch note ideas.
Yeah.
In education.
And I you know, when you say for a year, I would actually take it back even a bit more and go, you know, once a month.
Over
a course of a month. Okay, so for this month, what happened? What was one thing or two things that happened for you? And again, you could kind of create this visual graphic, right? You know, you create a page that looks like a calendar, right? So you can put, you know, March at the top of it and you know, have a place inside there where you're just writing some of the stories, but those get sort of placed graphically together in a way that it becomes a calendar of the whole year. And
My goodness, this is giving me a big aha too. Usually we do monthly newsletters, right? So why not have the students create that through a visual sketch note? Wow, that would be very cool. I love that monthly though. I hadn't thought about it that way. Very cool.
Yeah, because I think when we go too high level, you said to me, what was one of the more significant things in your life, right? Well, that's a big question. But how about this week?
Yes. Right? Yes.
And so, or this year. And I think that when we drill it down to a closer to the time that we're in or a smaller time frame, it does allow us to kind of not feel like it has to be something huge. And I think that that's a key thing for me, is that, you know, when I'm collecting stories, it's about ordinary, regular things. Mm. Yes, extraordinary stuff happens, but extraordinary stuff doesn't happen every week.
Sure.
And, you know, and yet, you know, the way that life was 20 years ago versus now is very different. And so to tell a story about, well, yeah, when I was 20, you know, this and this and this were going on in my life. And it's so, so different than now for a 20-year-old. And so someone that's, you know, 18 now or 15 now, you know, looking back, you know, to when they were five, like, or looking back even when they were 10, their life is very different. And I think that, you know, we want to recognize those ordinary things, those regular, you know, day-to-day life things too, that are and will be, as we get older, more extraordinary.
Yes, I love that. Before we move on to our rapid fire questions, is there anything that you want to add or tell the listeners that you haven't really had a chance to say?
I really, you know, one thought that came to me when you were talking about activities in the classroom, it would be really interesting to give the students the task of going and interviewing someone in their life. And I know that that's something that has, you know, often it happens around Remembrance Day and things like that. But it's, you know, having that opportunity to sit with someone and ask them some questions, it's such a profound experience. And it, you know, when you're doing that, you're not having a conversation, right? You're asking and you're not interjecting with your own story. You're just giving that person I talk about it as taking them on a journey down the memory river, mm-hmm. and really giving them the space to kind of wander and talk about things that they haven't talked about for a long time. But, you know, for the students to go and ask their parents, so what was it like when you were in grade 3? Like, you know, because we don't talk about that stuff at the dinner table, right?
That's right. Yes, you're right.
You know, and so just having that opportunity to kind of build relationship. I mean, the relationship I had with my dad was very good, but after I did his life story, it was incredible how much deeper our relationship was because I had given him that space to talk.
Mm, that's really profound. Thank you for adding that.
You're welcome.
What does kindness mean to you?
You know, it actually, that's a good question because, and the answer to the last one is the segue. I think kindness to me is being fully present to someone, to being really there for them. And whether it's, you know, you just see someone in the grocery store and you smile and you connect with them, you know, in a brief conversation, to being really deeply in a conversation with someone and allowing them to kind of express what they're feeling. And to me, that being fully present is a real big act of kindness.
Mm-hmm. What trait or superpower should an educator lead with in order to be effective?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think, oh, wow. That's a really big question. I would say that, you know, having, you know, knowing that there's so many different voices and so many different pathways that everybody comes to the room with, and that, you know, and I mean, huge kudos to educators for trying to navigate through a very complex classroom with different stories. But I think just recognizing that there are so many different stories that are out there, and I know that educators do, but I think that's got to be a superpower that they already have, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. And finally, if you were able to print one quote or message onto one of those quote cups that are sold in big bookstores, what would it be?
It's a privilege simply to be alive.
I agree. And I think it's important to remember that because I think it can be very easy to forget that fact. Debra LaFrank, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. Where can people find you?
It's been my pleasure. So thank you very much for inviting me. So my company is called Visual Life Stories, visuallifestories.com. I do a newsletter every couple of weeks, a little visual newsletter with some little nugget of story and a visual candy. So if you go on my website, you can find that there. And I, you know, Deborah@visuallifestories.com is my email. And I'd love to hear from your listeners.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gained from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag #SmallActBigImpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.